Hello and welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast 9-4. Desert Eagle here, and with me is the Marvin to my Hutch, Sean Nola Kirkland.
I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it's so sweet.
Voltron reference.
Marvin.
So, Marvin? No, Marvin and Hutch?
Yeah, Marvin was the green one, right? I would have been the orange one, the big orange guy.
Well, missing in action is Voltron's chest. What was her name? Ginger, a.k.a. Sage Samurage Morris Green, who's out tonight. Sean, why is she missing in action?
Finals,
huh? Okay. Let's not forget our own Pelvis, also known as Commander Cliff, Eric Blue Swim.
I was told this week by a Nickelback fan on Twitter that I have poor taste in music.
There are Nickelback fans. There are?
Yeah.
I've yet to meet one.
The guy started the account and he posted like 6 tweets. Mm-hmm. And they were all about like the new Nickelback album or whatever.
It's probably the lead singer.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Probably Chad Kroeger or whatever.
The fact that you know his name works.
Not a good song. Maybe just you can might make a case for Hero from the Spider-Man soundtrack, but I'm pretty sure Nickelback is not like in the upper echelon of music.
Blue, I'm not going down the Nickelback road. You're pushing me.
I'm not either.
So anyway, let's go Tech Gaming Force. Let's start with impressions. I want to start with Sean Nola. What have you been playing?
I was a little excited because we're going to talk about this PSP mini game, and I was like, hey, cool, no one will ever talk about this except for me, and it'll be something unique that we do. And then Patrick Klepek talked about it on Giant Bomb, so I'm bummed. But it's called Where Is My Heart?
Oh, I've been hearing about it, yeah.
It's actually really good. It's got this kind of generic-looking pixel art, mm-hmm. and it's a basic, you know, single-screen level where you collect hearts. You've got 3 characters that you can go in between. Each one has slightly different abilities, but the whole trick to it is they split the screen up into little panels and then mix the panels all around. So when you exit to the left of one panel, you might come in at some panel in some completely different area of the screen, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily use up the entire screen real estate, so the screen might be set up in this sort of pinwheel pattern or something, mm-hmm. and certain characters are able to flip the entire level around themselves.
Okay.
So it's a neat little puzzle game, and it's not terribly difficult, but it's challenging enough that it keeps you going. I think I'm maybe 15 levels in.
So what did you say? What goes on between the panels? What kind of action exists?
Nothing really goes on in between the panels. It's basically if you split your screen up into you know, a bunch of different size squares, mm-hmm. and then mix them all up.
Okay. I thought there was some kind of enemies or obstructions or something between panels. No.
Nope. It's just weird because you might be jumping from one panel to the next, and you won't know exactly where you're going to jump out.
Okay.
And sometimes there will be duplicate panels, so you'll show up in like 2 different places at once. And mm-hmm. it's just a kind of a very simple concept that they add this one element to that really throws it out of its ear.
Cool. So where is your heart?
All over the place, apparently. Yeah, you're trying to find hearts for trees, so figure that one out.
Go green.
Yeah. And other than that, I've been playing Skydrift, which I don't think anybody's been talking about, but that is a...
I think I've heard of that game. That's the one with dragons in it?
No, it's Skydrift.
Okay.
It's a PSN... I think it might also be on Xbox Live Arcade. But it came out a couple weeks ago, and it's really similar to Bravo Air Race, if you ever played that on the PS1. It's airplanes and racing.
Okay.
But then they added sort of Mario Kart-type power-ups to it. So, you know, you've got your machine gun and mines and...
Why did Mario Kart have machine guns?
No, but you get the
shells.
Idea. Like
shells.
Yeah, shells, and instead of red shells, you have missiles and things like that.
When Yoshi took it to Pimp My Ride,
yeah.
Exhibit put them on, free of charge.
I heard you like shells, so I gave you shells inside your shell so you can shell.
Double shell.
Sorry. That goes back to Dolly Parton.
But no, that game is really fun, and it's weird because apparently there was a demo of it, because when you download it, it still does the... demo and then the unlock thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I seriously doubt that game demo as well, because the first couple stages in it are pretty boring, and then it's not until you get to the second or third circuit that
starts picking up.
Yeah, like they do sort of the, what was that that game that Disney made, the racing game that had like all the crazy stuff going on during the races?
Was it N64? Was that?
No. This is this generation. Actually, this year, I think.
Was it? I know what you're talking about, and I can't think of the name of it either.
Was it Split Second?
Yeah.
I think
it was Split Second.
Yeah. So they try and do things like that. They're a little less successful because it's usually an avalanche, and it usually happens right at the end of the last lap to whoever's in second place, which can really suck because if you're like right on whoever's in first place's tail. You know, you'll get to that last turn and then all of a sudden a rock will fall on you. Mm-hmm. And so it goes from being a really close race to you're in, you know, like fourth or fifth place. And that sucks. But when it works well, it's really cool. It's just, it didn't seem to work that well all that often. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, it's a lot of fun. It controls really great. There aren't a lot of air race games out there. Especially not fun ones, and this one I don't get a lot of press, so I just wanted to give it a shout out. Cool. And then played Phantasy Star Online. That's still something you can play.
Is that like for the Dreamcast or?
Well, it's the Stack server. I was playing it on the PC, but you can also play the Dreamcast version and one of the GameCube versions on Stack server, and they all work. It's Dreamcast version 2, and I think GameCube version 2. But I was surprised. There were like 150 people online when I was playing the other night, and I was like, wow, there are more people playing this than are playing Space Marine on PS3, and it's kind of sad.
Oh, I almost picked up Space Marine.
It's
down to $40. Actually, I picked up the DLC game last week on 360, and I dug it. I love the really depressing, murky environments.
Yeah, cool. that's how the whole game is. So
they're so depressing; they make me happy.
Yeah, I was super bummed out when I heard like people are starting to talk about THQ and their stock prices. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think they sank below $1 share today, and I really hope they can pull through because they made some great games this year that I'd love to see sequels to, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, if THQ goes under, maybe then the WWE will get, like, some really good games. Like, maybe EA will pick it up, because I think they still have the rights to the engine that AKI or Aki or whatever was using back in the Nintendo 64 days.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to use an engine from the N64.
And they used it in Def Jam Vendetta.
Yeah, now that one turned out.
In Fight for New York.
Yeah, huh? And how did those turn out?
I mean, they weren't technical masterpieces. Like, they weren't technical masterpieces, but it's like the engine assets are, you know, they're still there.
Right. Yeah, it always bummed me out that there's not going to be a more another Red Faction. So I always like those games. Probably more than Saints Row. Volition fan, but I think Volition will. What's up? Yeah, wait for it. It's $40 this week, but I'd say 30 or less. It's really not worth running out. To grab. So speaking of big games around the holiday season, I know a number of readers were asking about Assassin's Creed Revelations, and I said I'd give impressions, but you guys are going to have to wait a short bit on that. The tag team attack of Mario Kart 7 and Fortune Street, along with, you know, stuff like podcast trivia and playing a little bit of Exotic, has left me a little bit busy. So promised to have a review up as quick as possible.
I've heard it's a lot like the last one.
Yeah, and from the complaints I've heard, about length, it shouldn't be too far in the immediate future. And I usually don't hear complaints about length too often. Yuck, yuck. Anyway, got to keep it going, so let me talk about Mario Kart 7, which I recently completed my last 150cc cup. And I spent about 3 hours playing multiplayer on the couch recently. So if you haven't read the review yet, here's a little spoiler. I really like it. One of the things I do dig about it is that driving has nuance. In the early levels, staying on the course isn't a problem. You know, it's really easy. But even on some of the tracks like the Rainbow Road. But as you advance to the upper cup, you really have to earn boost, and you do this by either drifting or bunny hops. And as such, the game forces you to maintain these really tight racing lines, so you're cutting corners to get the highest, you know, the red power boost there. The one thing that really impresses me, and I always talk to Sean about this, is the frame rate, which is really stable. During my three-hour poop socks session, I probably only saw...
Come on, you shouldn't need a poop sock for 3 hours.
Okay.
If you do, you need to call a doctor.
Dr. Feelgood, paging. No, I only saw leg maybe once or twice, and even then it was minor. And I was playing people in Japan, Korea, and Asia. And even
Japan,
in
Korea, and Asia.
Yeah, what am I saying? All over Asia, China too. even with the 3D mode, the game's refresh rate is just flawless. So that's it. You know, I think it's well worth the $40 for fans of the series. I really dig it. I wish there were a few more characters in there, but we'll get to that in trivia.
If we trivia.
Yes,
is snaking. An issue with online, because I know that was
I didn't see any snaking yet, and I've been trying like hell to, because there's a video of some snaking, I guess, somebody posted. I haven't been able to duplicate it, and I really haven't seen it online. But yeah, the DS, everybody and their mother did the snake, even me. And I guess that there was a little bit of controversy whether that was part of the game, part and parcel of the game, or not. But so far I haven't seen it, so it's not ruined yet.
I played it. There was a kiosk at my local Target, and I played it for a little bit, and I kept thinking, man, I really wish I could put my face on one of these guys.
You're not even funny, Sean. You are not even funny.
I know. I'll cut that face part out.
No, leave it in. Leave it in. I'm just saying that.
Put it in.
Yeah, put it in. That's just a stupid hook, putting a face on a razor. But the one you're referring to does have 40 tracks.
So I've heard.
But they're probably 40 awful tracks. That's the other thing about Mario Kart, is I like almost each and every one of the tracks. They have 16 of the old ones, 16 new ones, and they all just have like a hook or an angle that makes them cool, a lot of secrets and stuff like that. So that one was worth 40, not worth $50. Price of admission is Kinect Sports 2. I talked about that, I believe, last week. Picked it up on Black Friday for $25. It's a collection of 6 sports games. There's darts, golf, skiing, darts. I said darts twice. Baseball. There's a lot of darts.
Can you play darts against people in Asia?
And Japan and Korea as well. There's what else there? Football, there's tennis. They're all fairly intuitive. I think it is U.S. only. But... Like with tennis, you have to adjust when you swing your arms to compensate for the slight lag. My beef with it, my main beef, is there's just not enough content. And I think someone agrees with me because they're barking. Skiing, for instance, has 3 different runs to it, which if you break it down, I mean, each of the games are $8 to $10. And if that were a download and only came with 3 different runs, I think it wouldn't be enough to warrant the price. The game, it does have a couple of hooks, which are kind of cool. You can navigate, much like the recent XBLA update, you can navigate the menus, like with the Bing navigation. But it's much more accurate. I even tried out, I said Xbox Bing, and it didn't understand me today or yesterday.
Xbox Bing X-Men?
Did I Xbox Bing who?
X-Men?
No, I Xbox Bing anime porn. Didn't get much.
Mm. No tentacles.
Yeah.
Are you hooked up to the internet?
Yes, I am. I did inadvertently, I wanted to see if Hulu was watching, and I said King of Kong, and I got something else that was rather interesting. But I should have made a video of that. Maybe I will. Anyway.
Was it tentacle porn of Thelma from Scooby-Doo?
No tentacle porn at all. I scoped it all out. Sorry, Blue, to disappoint you. Save your money. Do not buy a Kinect. And I still don't understand the hook on that, because that, and I'm getting off topic here, but the Bing, the Xbox Bing, that could be done with with the existing microphone. And
I tried to do it with the microphone, because I didn't know it was like a Kinect exclusive feature, and I'm just sitting there talking to myself, and I feel somewhat stupid.
but one of the things, I was yelling at the TV feeling real stupid, but one of the things that's interesting is it works well in conjunction with a controller, because once, instead of typing, it's much easier to say something, and the accuracy is, it's spotty, but, you know, it saves you a little bit of typing there. But once you, it actually gives you a list of options, like if you want to watch a series, let's say, I don't know, whatever's on Hulu, like Community or something, you could use your controller to pick out, you know, which episode you want, and that's much easier rather than waving your hand around and selecting that. Not so big on. I'll probably never use that again. The big navigation. So anyway, back to Kinect Sports 2, which is what I was talking about. It's got licensed music, so there's George Michael's Faith after, you know, smash up game of darts that plays. I like the way the Kinect allows for these different, you know, celebratory motions, but without, you know, the hand mimicking, you can't make masturbatory motion, so that pretty much wrecks any reason to celebrate. Can't do much with it.
Hip thrust.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But I don't know, it just doesn't... the way it moves is just kind of generic. It's rather robotic. You know, there's only a few points of motion in there, like your arms and kind of your body.
I would make my victory dance just like the Pinocchio got no strings on me thing. Do-do-do-do.
I'll try that. I kind of
like
just
Conan
did the.
O'Brien does?
I did the Crash Bandicoot thrust.
Nice.
Wow.
There we go.
That's the last thing I played. I played a lot of Spyro this week.
Yeah, new Spyro or old Spyro?
Yeah, Spyro 2, Ripto's Rage.
I love those games. First three games, those were really good. So the last thing I was going to talk about is Fortune Street, which is the Square Enix developed, Nintendo published take on Monopoly. While it's called Itadaki Street, it's not Itagaki Street, so you don't have any ninjas, gore, boob physics. But if you don't mind that, it's a good diversion. If you're looking for a board game simulation on your Wii. Now that said, I think there's one problem with it. Now let's say I wanted to play with you, Sean. Each of us would have to spend $50, to buy two copies of the game. And most actual board games are around $30, and they also allow you to communicate. For some reason, this one, Nintendo abandoned WeSpeak support. So even if you have, you know, two copies of the game and a friend code, there's really no way to express yourself.
We have each other's cell phone numbers.
Okay, I guess you can use that or Skype or whatever. But really, I mean, they have a peripheral. Yeah, you have a peripheral for that. Anyone who bought, City Folk? Still has it, you know, probably in their closet. However, if you're, you know, after a local game or you're a misanthrope who doesn't want to communicate with people, then Fortune Street is pretty fun. Imagine Monopoly with different board sets, and you can buy the spots that you land on. And one thing that's kind of cool is you can even buy out someone by paying five times the value, so you can get all Donald Trump on their ass. You can invest in properties, at any time.
Do you pay that person five times the value, though?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I've always thought video game versions of Monopoly have always been kind of lame, because the fun part of Monopoly is always when you...
Under-the-table deals.
Yeah, you start using real-world commodities to make deals with people. Like, I will clean the
dishes.
Don't
forget swiping 20s off of the bottom of the banker pile.
Yeah, yeah, stealing the money, robbing the bank. So anyway, what makes it different, I think, is kind of cool, is the stock market. You can buy into different sectors, and you collect dividends on the rent. And what that does is, even if there's a player in the lead, you can kind of maximize your capital based on them. You can buy and sell at the right time. And so, you know, you make money based on the price or the trends of the market. There's the occasional card which does things like, you know, places free rent or fixes prices for a couple turns. And there are some, you know, a few mini games, but that's not really the emphasis. One of the things is unlike Monopoly, where you kind of go on for hours and hours, you try to reach a preset capital goal. And that's both your cash and your investments. And then after that, you head to the bank to win. I guess my other main problem is that I feel that the game's license aren't utilized. They have the Dragon Quest and Mario license. But, you know, it's like buying Star Wars Monopoly and seeing North Carolina Avenue instead of, like, Tatooine or Hoth or, you know, Dagobah or something.
Star Wars Monopoly was cool. I used to have that. That's one board game I actually took the time to buy and play.
Okay. I never actually had that, so I'm just making all this up. But I'm sure the names, the actual name, the planets, right, after the...
If I recall correctly.
The streets after the planets or areas. They don't do that. And there's even, like, you know, different famous backgrounds, but they don't really affect the game too much. It's almost like an afterthought. The shop names themselves are pretty generic. I wanted to go to, you know, Blue Slime's Elixirs or, I don't know, Yoshi's Island's Provisions, you know, different things like that. But it is cool. It's not the best board game adaptation, I think, that will ever be. End all, you know, be all. I still think Cold Set wins over. It's combination of Monopoly and Magic the Gathering is preferable to this. But, you know, fun nevertheless. I could see it earning maybe a B. So I should have the review up in a few days. Blue. Let me pass the torch.
What was that?
Let me pass the torch.
Ah, and I'll take the torch. Because I've been hanging a lot of them on the wall in Minecraft Pocket Edition, which was 10 cents this week. Or yesterday or day before, something like that. Android had...
Cue up, hey, big spender.
Yeah, I had to skip a couple of dinners to afford to pay it, to buy it.
Wow.
but yeah, Android is celebrating their 10 billionth app sold or downloaded or whatever by giving away 10 10-cent apps for 10 days. And that was the highlight of the
is it
day
10
one.
Days or 7 days?
Because
I calculated my potential loss, and I thought it was going to be $7.
You may
be right. Okay. I sure hope it's 10 days.
Yeah, it's... I mean, the lineup has been pretty impressive. I know I picked up... I pulled the trigger on the full version of Fruit Ninja, and I probably won't ever play it, but what the hell.
You know what bothers me about that game, by the way? The dark... What are they? The kiwi fruits?
Yeah.
If you ever play it in the sun, you can't really see the dark brown fruit against the dark brown background.
So. Yeah, that's one problem I had, too. It's probably the viewing aspect ratio or whatever on my tablet, but it's like sometimes like stuff in the lower corners or whatever won't show up very well when I'm playing it in portrait mode.
Hmm.
And I guess I have to unlock some...
Sean, are you saying it? Tablet
I
talk.
I just said it.
Okay.
Yes, tablet talk. More tablet talk. Tablet talk round two. Electric tablet? I don't know. But yeah, you have to unlock like another background or whatever. I know they're in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I've mainly been playing, you know, Minecraft. It's basic. It's extremely basic. It's like the definition of sandbox gaming, like, for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But was it Mojang, the developers, said that survival mode's going to be coming to it, crafting and enemies and animals and stuff like that.
Was that promised? Survival mode?
Yeah, as far as my understanding. Awesome. It's going to be coming. It's not going to be – I'm not expecting it within the next month or two, but it is coming.
Cool.
Are you going to talk about the game that I care about?
Great Little War Game?
No.
Did you pick that?
No. Actually, I just this evening found the means to hook up my Sega Genesis again. I lost the RF adapter for my Genesis 3 and I need a little connector box thing that you get at Radio Shack to run my original Genesis, which I got at a yard sale without an RF adapter, and so I just found it this evening.
Which generation Genesis is it?
It's the first. I have the first. Yeah,
the
one
and the three.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had the second generation Genesis, but it ended up dying probably because of taking the 32X prongs out of it one too many times.
Yeah, I didn't like the 3 because I didn't like how it was so light. Like, it didn't feel like there was anything in it. Not that you're going to be carrying it around a lot, but I don't know. Just did not
sit
well.
If you're trying to put a cartridge in or, you know, or whatever, it slides all over the place. If you pull the controller back a little bit too far, that thing goes flying out of the entertainment center. Yeah. It's too damn light.
Wow.
But I saw in the outline I played VR Troopers, and surprisingly enough, that is actually a game I like for the Game Gear. I remember this one beat, and it's like do 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 do. And then it.
What's going on?
That was like what?
He's having a seizure. did it have the talking dog in there?
I think he was like in the cutscenes, and then there was the old guy who was like in like some computer monitor or whatever, and it's got like a multicolored background and. It's like a couple of the popular villains from the show. And should I actually use the word popular in reference to VR Troopers?
Yes. Everybody loves VR Troopers.
I haven't seen hide nor hair of that show in eons.
Because it's only one season long.
Oh, well, that explains a thing or ten.
I thought it was two.
What about Big Bad Beetleborgs?
I'm pretty sure both of those only lasted one season.
I thought it was two for VR Troopers.
I don't know. I'm sure our listeners would love to, for us to sit here and debate it.
The internet says 94 to 96.
Ooh. Go internet.
Boom. Boom.
Headshot.
Sean's been taken down. Yeah. Oh, season two. Yep. Started with Mutant Mutiny. Love that title.
Sounds like something you would title an article for like an X-Men Destiny review.
A bad X-Men Destiny review.
Sean knows me all too well. That's the scary thing. It's like he's seeing me naked right now. Anyway, continue on with VR Troopers.
Well, it's basically this game where you have... It's a fighting game, but it's kind of slow-paced, and you enter the control, and you can tap, like, I think it was the one button repeatedly, and you could swipe back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And mm-hmm. I think it was the one villain would have this neat sword attack, and that was pretty much it for VR Troopers.
You realize you didn't actually play that this week. I was just putting it on there because you also didn't play Sailboat Moonbeam.
I know the thing is it's actually one of my favorite Game Gear games. Of course, it's not like I play too much Game Gear anymore, but that was the one game that I used to always carry around in my Game Gear. You know, when I was, you know, of course, Game Gear was kind of like a brick, especially with those rechargeable battery pack things that had like grips on the back. That thing was a monster, really.
Unlike the Generation 3 Genesis.
Yeah. Actually, I'm pretty sure the Generation 3 Genesis is smaller than a Game Gear.
Yeah.
Certainly sure. Weighs less. But anyway.
Yeah, it's been it's kind of same old gaming for me this week. I mean, I just played some more Oblivion, played some more Persona, mm-hmm. played some more Pocket League Story. Everybody better go buy that one.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it for me.
Okay.
I wonder if they're ever going to re-release Pocket Kingdoms for cell phone.
Pocket Kingdoms?
Yeah, it was the one good N-Gage game.
I tell you, there was another one. It had, like, tanks in it or something.
I'm sure there was.
N-Gage! I remember N-Gage. Cannon Fodder. That was the thing that was a
Cannon Fodder for N-Gage was pretty good.
Cannon Fodder, was that the Jaguar adaptation?
It was
probably original.
Closer to the Genesis version.
Okay.
Yeah.
On that note, we got an interview. I think it's time to take a trip to Seattle, hang out with the development team of Patrick, Darren, and Lyndon of WXP Games, who are going to come and talk about exotic and virtual roller coaster rides on alien planets. And I also have a feeling we're going to talk about space pineapples and pears wearing tutus right now. Hey guys, Desert Eagle here. I am being joined today by Patrick, Studio Director for WXP Games. Also on the line is Darren, who's the Technical Director, and Lyndon, the Creative Director. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Awesome. Now, I think for many listeners, the WXP moniker might be pretty familiar from your work on Greg Hastings' Tournament Paintball and Zenit's light camera action. But looking over your resume, you guys started with Disney Cyberspace Mountain. Tell me a little bit about that project.
Yeah, that was actually the project where the team met each other. We were all kind of independent contractors at the time, and we're working for this company here in Seattle called Zombie. And I don't know if you've heard of those guys, but they've done a bunch of cool games as well for Xbox and PC. And we all met each other on that project. And when it was done, we really liked working with each other and decided to just start up a game company together. So that was how.
Very cool. Now, this is a virtual reality ride, or what is Cyberspace
Mountain? Yeah, that's right. Cyberspace Mountain is a virtual reality motion simulator ride. So it's a two-part system. You design a roller coaster on a little touchscreen at one of these Disney theme parks. It's called Disney Quest.
Okay.
And then you hop inside this motion simulator. They're actually like military fighter jet simulator pods that they retrofitted with our software to simulate these roller coaster rides through all these alien planets.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, more recently, moving on to maybe this decade, we covered Greg Hastings' second game, which was developed by a different developer, at least credited by. So what happened there in the transition from the original Tournament Paintball?
Oh, well, you know, the paintball games were a really big success for us, and we were really excited about them. And the partner on that was Activision, but we also had another partner over on the paintball side of things. And so it was sort of a 50-50 ownership of that franchise. And it was just, you know, one thing led to another, and we decided to part ways, and they've done some work with the franchise since. But, you know, I like to think that we still made the best paintball games. and, you know, I think there's a lot of paintball people who agree with me. But we're actually working on getting back into the paintball world again. So, you know, don't kind of count us out there yet.
Okay. More paintball to come. Now let's talk about your latest title, which is called Exotic. That's X-O-T-I-C. It's a PC and XBLA first-person shooter that, like, I guess you'd say, Greg Hastings, is radically different from the glut of military-themed shooters. Can you tell me a little bit more about the game?
I'm going to let Lyndon take this one. He pretty much is the lead designer. So,
okay.
Yeah, so we decided to jump back into our own intellectual property with Exotic. And this was right after we had finished the paintball project. So we had all this really good AI and really good gunplay kind of mechanics that we wanted to put sort of a new layer of paint on and bring into some more interesting environments. So thus, we created this alien sort of planet where your goal is to sort of take back over the planet that's been infected by a creature called the Orb. So your goal is to wipe out all of the signs of the Orb. It's left its mark in several ways. It's, for one, it's got a element that we call scab plants, and those are all over every level. And as you shoot one of them, they explode and create chain reactions. So these chain reactions deliver you points and pickups. So as you pop the scab plants, you'll oftentimes find pickups in there like speed shot or double damage. So you're trying to clear these pods out and bolster your own arsenal with pickups, as well trying to gather points. Now this goes back to sort of the core game mechanic of Exotic, which came along through sort of natural occurrences through the design. We've gone into sort of an old school arcade approach, which is a point-based game. So you're not just shooting and fighting enemies, but you're trying to gather as many points as possible in as short amount of time as possible, hearkening back to old coin-op arcade games.
Yeah. Now, speaking of those scabs, now popping those little red pustules there and chain reactions for me is a very satisfying thing. It almost reminds me of lighting a string of firecrackers. And help me understand my fascination with these objects, because I just, you know, each and every one, I just got to hunt down and, you know, scour the whole level for those.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very addictive mechanic. Mm-hmm. And it came to me in playing a different game. I was actually playing Zelda. And you know how there's grass everywhere in Zelda? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And as you chop it, you sometimes find crystals. Mm-hmm. And I was compelled in Zelda to always just go to every little corner and chop as much grass to try to find as much stuff as I could. And I wanted to reverse that mechanic to where instead of chopping down grass, what you're doing is destroying these scab plants. Mm-hmm. And in place of the red alien disease, grows new life. Mm-hmm. So you're actually planting plants by taking these things out. Mm-hmm. And the same with Zelda, you're trying to find goodies by doing that.
Right. It feels better than mowing the virtual lawn.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Well, I think we put a lot of work into the sound design in there. Mm-hmm. As well. If you notice, when you start that chain, like the sounds start escalating and mm-hmm. Points start increasing in value, and the sounds get a little bit more satisfying the longer the chain goes.
Yeah. So
we're inspired a lot by games like Peggle.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yeah, very cool. Now, one thing I noticed is that Exotic, it reminded me, I'm not sure if you guys had played it, the Sega published Bizarre Creations developed underappreciated game, The Club. Did you guys ever play that?
You know, we hear that a lot and mm-hmm. get a lot of comparisons. I remember when that game came out, and I remember seeing some footage of it, and I might have played the demo, but I didn't really ever get to spend a lot of time with that game. Mm-hmm. So I think the similarities must be coincidental, but mm-hmm. but we do get compared to that game a lot. I think it must just be the arcade sort of point scoring nature of the gameplay laid on top of the first-person shooter, which is usually just a very narrative-driven experience as opposed to an arcade experience.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about the game's art style. It seems like you guys wanted more of an abstract-looking game that set itself apart from the sea of titles that really aim for photorealism.
Yeah, that was very deliberate. We, being a small studio, can't really compete with the big Call of Duties and Gears of Wars out there. So to set ourselves apart, for one, in the gameplay, again, with the arcade nature, and for two, the look and feel. So to just really get those saturated colors back into the environment instead of your browns and grays that are the typical palette, mm-hmm. to really just go off on the fantastical sort of lighting effects and some of the plant life, having an alien world to flush out has really given us a lot of opportunity to just do whatever we want from our imagination.
Now, one thing I noticed perhaps in keeping with the game's organic theme is that some of the enemies are a little bit camouflaged. Was this a deliberate decision? I'm thinking of, I'm sorry if I don't know the name of it, but there's almost this ant hill that puts these exploding spiders or ants, you know, your way. And it's on the ground, and the color of the ground in the hive, you almost have to seek out where these little rascals are coming from.
Right. There's sort of a juxtaposition to what your goal is, which is to finish a level as quickly as possible and eliminate all of the creatures to move on and score to the leaderboard. Mm-hmm. So to sort of throw a blockade in the player's path to sort of make that goal a little more difficult, we really camouflaged a lot of the creatures. A lot of the creatures also like to hide. Mm-hmm. They've got that paintball AI, so they like to hide behind bunkers. So it's not as easy just to mop up a level as a typical run and gun.
One thing I would like to point out, though, and a lot of people don't notice this, but right around the center of your crosshair, there's a circle with a red arrow on it.
Yes.
And that actually acts as a compass and points towards the nearest enemy. So if you are trying to figure out where the enemies in the level are, just follow that dot and it'll take you to the closest one. And in addition to that, in the upper left-hand corner of the screen, there's a little set of icons showing you how many enemies are remaining in the level, and they have a little red background that shows you what their health levels are, too. So there's some clues there as to where the enemies are and how many are left.
Now, since Exotic is pretty different from most first-person shooters, do you have any additional pro tips besides, say, the user interface, ways to conquer a level in the speediest time possible? How do you guys do it?
The hard hologram device is essential to master. For a lot of people, forget the fact that you can use it as a shield. Once you start using it as an aerial landing platform, that's pretty much how you end up using it, just naturally. But it's easy to forget, and using it as a shield is a huge benefit. In fact, once you lay a shield down, the enemies will actually target your hologram shield instead of your character. So it's a nice little diversion. If you get overwhelmed, you can box enemies in with these things. Remember, you can lay three of them down at one time. Mm-hmm. So you can literally rush an enemy and corner him and box him in with these hologram shields. That's sort of one aspect that trickles down into a lot of the gameplay philosophy. It's sort of a sandbox. You can play whatever way you like. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to, you know, hide, or if you really want to just run and gun, you can play those ways.
And I would add two more tips in there. One is that, I don't know if you've noticed them, but there's a couple of point multiplier power-ups that'll be the levels.
Yeah.
Some double points and some triple points.
I think it was the pineapple?
Yeah, looks like a space pineapple.
Yeah.
Definitely learn where those are. Because if you're going to get like a big bonus, like when you kill all those scab plants, you get like 25,000 points. If you have a triple point multiplier going, that's 75,000 points. So you definitely want to make sure that you have a good plan for when you pick those up and then when you get your points. And then the other thing to point out is that there's a power-up that's called Flight, which kind of looks like a pear with a tutu on it. That allows you basically to double, triple, and quadruple jump. So you can get to some really high places really quick. And the gun you're carrying, the Macro Terra, has this indicator on it. It normally looks blue, but when you have that flight power up, it's yellow. And when that yellow turns to a purple, then you can flap your wings again and get that extra jump.
Hmm. Cool. Now, tell me a little bit about Exotic's game engine. Is this an internal product?
It is. It's the same engine we've been using since, Cyberspace Mountain. certainly Lord of the Rings forward. So we've used it as a third-person action-adventure engine, a trivia engine, a paintball engine, even an engine for preteen girl minigame.
Pretty versatile.
Yeah.
We have no shame when it comes to what jobs we take here at WH.
I like that. There you go. So speaking of, you had mentioned a possible return to paintball. What's next for the WXP team?
Well, we got a lot of things on the burner. You know, obviously, right now we're looking at mobile games, and that's pretty tough nut to crack right now. With like 500 new releases on the App Store every day, it's pretty hard to get noticed. But you know, it's an interesting space, and so we're looking at that. And then for our core technology, which is you know, currently runs on the PC and the Xbox 360 and the Wii. You know, we'd like to port it over to PlayStation 3 and possibly get a version of Exotic out on that. And then, we are talking about other franchises that we might do in the future. And And certainly revisiting paintball is something that we'd love to do and are talking about doing now.
Currently, we're creating a bunch of downloadable content for Exotic and revising the gameplay to essentially Exotic 2, mm-hmm. Where we've added several new game modes. The game is kind of a hybrid between a racing game and a first-person shooter. Racing in that you're trying to get the points as fast as you can and get to the goal of completing the level. So we underline that feature by adding some race modes. They're called attack modes. And so you'll be able to play the game in its entirety in campaign mode and then three of these other race modes. So the game got, you know, four times larger, as well as the downloadable content packs that are coming next year.
Yeah, we should point out that right now we're talking about the Steam version of the game, but we release an update for XBLA as well with some of this stuff.
Okay. Do you guys have a timetable for that?
Not yet. It'll be next year at the earliest. So yeah, you're talking to pretty much the entire dev team right now. There's mm-hmm. three of us, and so we can pretty much focus on one thing at a time.
Sure.
So right now we're looking at that at the PC stuff, and then we'll get back on the Xbox again.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and I encourage the listeners to check out Exotic.
Thank you very much.
While we're in Seattle, can we, like, stop by the house of Kurt Cobain? Because I think that would be a really cool place to take my picture in front of.
This is, like, the third time you brought him up on this show. One more time, and I'm putting you in the corner with Sage and her Hackers references.
What? You don't like grunge music?
Watch what's coming up. Never mind. Okay, we're back now. How about those tutus, Sean?
They're Desmond.
Are they wearing plaid? No, I guess not.
Do they have
Sean hates grunge.
Of their jeans?
They don't hate grunge. I'm just saying it's a video game podcast.
Okay. So let's jump to mailbag. Why don't you read the questions, Sean?
All right. So Jet Grind Radio asks, what
Radio.
Games that were released during October and December did you overlook? Do you think the push to put all the games out during that time was good or bad? Well, like we said earlier, we missed Assassin's Creed.
Good if you're Call of Duty and Skyrim, and bad if you're not.
Yeah, basically. Games just got blown over us. Skydrift, the entire reason I played that was because I thought it was sad that this game looked really cool, came out, and zero. I mean, I didn't even get a press release about Skydrift. If I had not just happened to have been cruising the PlayStation Network when I was, I would not have seen that at all.
I think it casually... I don't know. Maybe it's too early to call it that, but Rayman Origins might have slipped through the cracks.
No, Rayman Origins, it's not too early to call it. They sent that to die, and that's really sad because there's 3 years of build-up at E3.
And it's a really fun game. I have it. Yeah. I'm playing it.
That's really upsetting, and I still haven't played it. I still haven't played the story in Uncharted 3. Mm. I haven't had a chance to sit down and play that. So,
We should talk about that next week.
We should.
Okay. Next question.
I'm a pretty dude, says Sony Vita. Who's in?
You're a pretty dude?
What?
You're a pretty
dude? I'm a pretty dude.
Oh, pretty dude. I thought you were calling yourself a pretty dude.
But that's beside the fact.
It's arguable.
I'm definitely in because, like I've said before, PSP has been my system of choice this generation, and so a better one of those is what I want.
Sean, you turned me on to the Pepsi Next, Dynasty Warriors Next.
I hope that happens in the States. I know it won't, but I hope it does.
It will never happen unless Pepsi Man gets his own game. But from there, I looked up Dynasty Warriors on the Vita. Jesus, that looks hot. So
yeah,
I'm there. Not just because of that game, but I'm definitely there day one.
I hope somehow or another Phantasy Star Online 2 makes it to the Vita. I know it won't, but it'd be nice if it did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll pick up Hot Shots. What else?
Uncharted.
Oh, yeah.
That's
about saying.
Little Deviants, which I guess is going to come with it in the bundle pack. don't know. And then just transferring all my PSP stuff is enough for that first month, really.
Yep.
I mean, I was interested in it, you know, when the 250 price point was announced, and, you know, I saw some of the games and it looked really good. And then when I heard about how much the memory cards were going to cost and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, I'm out. I'll stick with the 3DS that I don't use.
You know what, though? Here's my thing about the memory cards, is that if you don't get it at launch, it's not going to be a big deal. Because you know what else had expensive memory cards?
The PSP.
Well, the PS1 and the...
They were? How much were they?
N64. They were expensive when they're like... $30-$40 for like no space at all
for 256k.
Yeah, and what happened was Mad Catz and Nyko made
shitty ones
of it, and that's what everybody had.
But they were shitty.
They weren't that bad. My Nyko one still works. That's what I bought with it.
I bought a third party one, and it took a dump, and I lost some of my Final Fantasy, I think 7 data. And
I never had a problem with my Nyko one. It was a pack. It came with a controller and a memory card.
Were they like 8 megabytes? And then they had ones, the first set that came out, and you switched it, you hit a switch, and you got like 16, you got like a double pack.
I had one of those, one that had the LED thing on the front.
Those were garbage, fucking garbage.
My first one that I got was just a standard memory card. It came with a controller, and the controller broke because the D-pad was all one big plate.
My grandpa had a third-party controller, and that's exact same thing happened to his.
I think it's harder to screw up memory now, and I think if they open that up to third-party people, I don't see it being an issue.
No, just like Mad Catz, they're not the same company they used to be. They used to create some really shitty stuff, and now they, you know, have some good stuff.
Yep.
Good peripherals. Next question.
Yep. Oren Ishii asks, what's the last coin-op game you played, and do any of you still go to arcades?
I think the last coin-op game I played was probably Tekken Tag Tournament at a Fuddruckers.
At a where?
Fuddruckers.
Oh, okay.
Like
I thought you said something else.
I've never actually been to a Fuddruckers.
It's expensive, but it's good. If I recall correctly, it's been about 10 years since I've been there.
No, there's a good one in Burbank, Sean. We should go.
Yeah, we should. Last coin-op game I played was, I think, the Loop in the Third shooting game.
Wow.
What was that?
Yeah.
It's like Time Crisis, but with Loop in the Third.
I know, but where is it? You trumped us all. I've never seen an arcade machine for Loop in the
really,
Third.
But really, it's at when you go to Little Tokyo, that kind of abandoned mall that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they've got it there. Okay. Yeah, along with Typing of the Dead that doesn't have any keys left on it.
So it lasts about three minutes.
I try and stop in there whenever I go to Little Tokyo, which hasn't been very often lately. I think the last time I was there is like May.
I was at a car dealership in the Valley, and they had one of those coin-op units where it was free to play, and it had about 12 different games on there, the old Pac-Man. And for some reason, those 12, even though they're exact same, you know, ROMs, it just doesn't feel as well as a dedicated machine. It's not the same for me. I don't know.
It's like part of the experience is like the cabinet specifically for the game with all the art on it, you know?
Yeah, but I'm a little lenient towards the old Neo Geo games where you could choose one of five games for some reason.
Yeah, Neo Geo for me is always something that's either in a hallway or at a laundromat, you know?
Yep.
Like when I was actually at an arcade, I never played Neo Geo games.
Oh, I did. I played the shit out of Metal Slug.
Because when I was at an arcade, there was like Captain Commando or something else that I wasn't going to find at a pizza parlor.
Okay. Do we have any more questions?
We have one more. Yes. S.E. Chewbacca asks, so what do you think about the whole Miyamoto is leaving / Miyamoto is not leaving chatter? Did Wired do the research, or is Nintendo protecting their stock prices? And I think what that basically comes down to, actually Sage already answered this on our website, but it's the same thing. It's people playing telephone. Wired had an interview with Miyamoto. I think it got a little mistranslated, where he basically said he's going to take time off from doing what he has been doing so that he can foster some new talent and work on some smaller projects. Mm-hmm. But he's not stepping down from his position, and he's not stepping down from Nintendo or retiring or anything. He's just adjusting what he's doing. And I think they probably had a talk with him about, hey, listen, we need to stop pushing new hardware so much and maybe get a couple of good games out there, and nobody else at Nintendo seems to be able to do that. So if they have to focus on making games right now, that's their best thing.
I totally agree with that.
The question is, does he use this as an opportunity to do something like Wii Music again?
Oh, crap.
You went there.
Well, I mean, he's still convinced that that was a masterpiece.
Maybe it will be. Time will tell.
Nope.
And the thought of that one guy playing the drums on at E3.
Robbie Drums. Robbie Drums. Yeah. Yeah. Robbie Drums is fucking awesome.
We do have one more trivia question from Twitter, if you guys are up for it.
Yep.
Trivia question or mailbag question?
Huh?
Trivia question or mailbag question?
Mailbag, excuse me. This is from our good friend Jeremy Lamont. Fumito Ueda left Sony, but is now a contractor, and executive producer Yoshi Hayama is out. Normal production lifespan, or is there no more room for 5-year passion projects in AAA retail game development?
I think AAA retail development has never been the place for 5-year passion projects. I mean, I think the difference has been the idea, you know, 5-10 years ago that a game would come out that took that long to make. It would sell as well as games sold back then, but I don't think something that takes 5 years is going to capture the same audience as Modern Warfare.
Sure.
So I think our definition of AAA games has changed. I think people still have those labors of love, and they'll still be well received by critics.
And the industry moves quick enough where if you start something in 5 years, your end product comes back, it's almost always going to feel dated.
Yeah.
No. Duke Nukem Forever didn't happen at all.
Still surprised that thing.
5 years or 15 years, $5. That's like a labor of love. How much is that? 33 cents per year.
I think we can
buy it this week.
Of course, look at Gran Turismo. That thing was in development for, what, 5 or 6 years? And
it's still in development.
Pretty much wiped the floor with it. If you ask me, and I am kind of biased towards Forza. But,
well, I think if you ask most people that aren't emotionally invested in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that GT5 does that Forza doesn't, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think they're comparable games, but I think as overall experience goes, I think that Forza 4 just is a more solid game. I think it's harder to get frustrated with it.
Yeah.
It's had a hard time finding its way out of my Xbox.
Yeah.
Well, that's a problem. You should just have to hit the eject button. That's not really a feature. That's...
And it goes bing.
Broke Xbox.
Anyway, I think it's time to move on to trivia.
Hey, I'm going to leave you guys for trivia, though. Send me whatever recording you have, and I will patch it all together tomorrow.
You suck.
I'm sorry. My hands are tied.
All right. No problem.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Catch you later.
Bye.
Sean had to leave. He was having a mental breakdown after that last question. So let's continue with trivia. Just you and E-Blue. Here we go. Number one. Yeah, that's the showdown. Okay. Although U.S. players might be making their way down Fortune Street this week, Japanese players have been moving down Itadaki Street for years. Which console did the Wheeling and Dealing franchise first show up upon? A, Nintendo Famicom. B, Super Famicom. C, Sega Mega Drive, or D, PC Engine?
Ooh. If I were to guess, I'd say the Super Nintendo. Of course, it's me, and Super Nintendo is always a personal preference if I have to take a guess.
Super Famicom, Uber Alls. Correct answer, just a regular, plain old Famicom.
Shit.
Yeah. Number two, chance to redeem yourself. The release of Jaws Ultimate Predator may be enough to scare potential purchasers from both the ocean and retail stores. The largely panned 1987 version of the game had a bonus round cribbed from what famous arcade game? A, Karate Champ. Or I should say Karate Chomp. B, Galaga. C, Kid Nicky, Radical Ninja. Or D, 1942.
Ooh.
Jaws, 1987, LGM.
I'm trying to remember.
There was a rainbow.
Every video game nerd ever touched on that, because I know we played Jaws for the NES, but I can't.
That would be an oversight if he didn't launch into that game.
I think I'm going to go with 1942. I'm probably going to be wrong, but.
Correct answer would be dun, 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 Galaga.
Ah, damn it.
Here's your another chance. Double or nothing this time. The Adventures of Tintin, the game, may be getting the shaft from readers, but that doesn't mean it isn't born from fine French pedigree. Which of the following titles isn't from the same development studio? A, From Dust, B, Rayman Origins, C, Red Steel 2, or D, Beyond Good and Evil? So we're looking for the title that wasn't from the same development studio.
Ooh.
Montpellier.
What was the first one?
From Dust.
I'll go with that. I'll go with From Dust.
Double or nothing. And the correct answer is Red Steel 2.
Ah, crap!
So
swing at a miss, strike three.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, there's five strikes in our game. Number four, Defense Grid U-Monster, has more than a unique name. It also has an appearance by what gaming luminary? A, Super Meat Boy, B, GLaDOS, C, Commander Video, or D, that helicopter from Choplifter?
That's a pretty unique answer. The only thing missing is like he put it in.
That's always the final answer.
I think I'll go with GLaDOS.
Nah, you redeem yourself.
Yeah.
Correct answer, GLaDOS.
Hoo-ha!
Number five, winning the 150cc Cup in Mario Kart 7 unlocks a number of familiar faces. Which one of the following characters didn't make it to the races? A, Waluigi, B, Shy Guy, C, Wiggler, or D, Daisy? Are you a fan of the Wiggler, Blue?
I'm thinking Wiggler. I mean, that's Wiggler. Super Nintendo, baby. Super Mario World. Grew up on it.
The Wiggler. Yeah, the Wiggler. Correct answer, though, Waluigi.
Oh, crap.
Give me a Waluigi laugh. Oh, damn, that's pretty good. What's his name? Charles? Who does the voice for Mario? Charles Montanay, yeah. Does he also do Waluigi?
I think he does Mario, Luigi, Wario, and Waluigi.
Not Daisy?
I don't think he does a Daisy.
I think he does Daisy. I think he does Mario.
He put it in.
Yeah, I think he does Mario, too. Anyway.
Oh, no! Yeah.
Let's triple jump our way out of here. Thanks for listening. See you next week, guys.